On Crick Info, this is Time Out with Harsha Bhogle.
Welcome once again to Time Out with Harsha. And this time we've got our old friends back in the studio. And that means you'll get a lot of strident thought. Sanjay Manjrekar is here, so is Ian Chappell. And we're going to talk about all the debate that's come up, emanating mainly from Australia, about the future of the 50-overs game. There's an Asia Cup that's happening, so the one-day cricket is back in focus. But we're going to talk about all the various alternatives that are being thrown up in Australia as well. Do you play two separate 25-over games? Do you continue the game? Do you keep it as is? So that's going to be the main focus of our discussion. And while in the Asia Cup, we'll ask Sanjay Manjrekar if he's got any special memories of the Asia Cup. He's played a couple. And then we'll go across to Rajesh to give us his thoughts on the number of one-dayers that have been played in recent times. So that's what we've got today on Time Out. So let's start with the Asia Cup that's underway now. The Asia Cup started a couple of decades ago. It was meant to be this big tournament for the Asian bloc. Maybe an opportunity as well for the younger teams, for the other teams, the Omans, the Hong Kongs, the UAEs, to get their chance in the sun to try and prove that they have an opportunity to impress on the big stage. This Asia Cup, though, that's not happening. And that suggests to me that the Asia Cup has lost its focus a little bit. But let me start with Sanjay, who's actually played a couple of Asia Cups. You like the idea? Do you ever see it becoming, for example, a big European championship, for example, of the way they have in football?
To be honest, no. When I played the Asia Cups, it was no different from all the international matches that we played. You know, we played so much of cricket in Sharjah that every time it was called something different. You know, sometimes it was the Australasia Cup, sometimes it was the Asia Cup, then we played one in India. So I don't think, if you ask cricketers who played in the 90s and played loads of one-day international cricket, whether they would remember Asia Cup as being a different tournament. So it was actually merged with all the other cricket that we played. So it didn't quite get the significance that perhaps it should get.
For example, if you ask a footballer, if you ask a Dutch footballer and say, how was Euro 8 compared to World Cup 2010? It may not be quite the same as World Cup. It'll still be a big event for him to play the Euro. Nothing like that with the Asia Cup.
Nothing like that. It was just one of the many international matches that we played. At the end of it, when you won the final, you got the Asia Cup. That was the only difference. Apart from that, you can say the World Cup is different, or maybe to an extent, you know, the Champions Trophy, when you play it, you win it, you feel that you won something different. Asia Cup, at the time that it came, and, you know, even today, I don't think it has the status that it should really have.
Chappelli, last time there was an Asia Cup, you and me were sitting in the middle of the night in a studio in Singapore. Do you think tournaments like these can become big and significant?
No, I don't see it really happening. I think, if I remember correctly, I don't know whether it was the original idea, but at some point the idea was to raise funds for the lesser Asian countries. And, I think there's better ways of doing that. And also the other idea was, as you mentioned, to give some of the lesser lights games against, you know, the major countries. That's not happening now.
There was also one very important reason that we had Asia Cups during that time, because the big was India-Pakistan cricket. And, you know, everybody looked at an opportunity to get India to play Pakistan. Now, touring Pakistan during a certain time wasn't easy, and same was for Pakistan. So Asia Cup became the convenient sort of tournament where you could have it in a little country and have India-Pakistan playing the finals. So that was, I think, one of the important reasons for the Asia Cup also being staged quite often during that time.
Yes, I mean, India haven't played Pakistan for a while now, so India-Pakistan will be one of the games you look forward to. But in India-Sri Lanka, Chappelli, can you follow India-Sri Lanka at all? Because it's a bit like a term exam. You get one every 3 months.
I wasn't very good at exams, so I guess I'm not very good at following India-Sri Lanka, but they do seem to have played a lot lately, yeah.
So do tournaments like the Asia Cup, Chappelli, eventually end up just adding to a vast number of one-day internationals without a lot of significance? I think one of the dangers that afflicted one-day internationals, which was a wonderful form of the game when it first started, was there's too many of those without too much relevance?
The problem is, if you use the term meaningless to a cricket administrator, he immediately says, well, they're not meaningless because, we get full houses at a lot of the games. And so they're meaningful in that we get a lot of funds from these games. When I answer that in two ways, by saying, well, you know, your sole reason for having a tournament or a match cannot purely be financial. It's got to be a little deeper than that. And you know, I think eventually, if you just play too many games that don't seem to have great significance, then the players play them in that sort of fashion. And I think it's pretty well, you know, I think most people accept the fact that the problems with match fixing in the late 90s, early 2000s, a lot of that came from the fact that the players felt as though they were playing in games that didn't have a lot of meaning. And therefore, it was felt it was easier to fiddle around with those sort of games. So I've been a believer for a long time that the way to look at the cricketing program is to go for more quality and cut back on the quantity.
I remember, Harsha, when I was playing for India and playing a lot of one-day international cricket, you know, and during one of those times when I was taking another flight to play another one-day tournament, I met one of these guys who are involved with television marketing and people who sell the game and make money. And I told him, don't you think this is a bit too much? Aren't you giving the viewers too much cricket? Mm. And his reply was, he took me for a fool. And he said, no, are you kidding? In fact, they want more. And if you give them more, they want even more. I think the time has come today where the Indian viewer, which was really the most sort of hungry for cricket, is starting to say enough. If you talk to cricket fans, you know, I've talked to numerous cricket fans and I've just asked them, so have you been following this series going on? Yeah, I've watched a couple of games, but there's just too much cricket, so I've not been able to watch it as much as I would like. And they don't watch it as passionately, and they're not following international cricket, even Indian international cricket, as seriously as they used to.
It's an interesting thought that Chappelli brought out the cricketer's aspect pretty well. I was going to come to you with the other actor in the drama, which is the common man. Now, television networks are saying we're still getting viewership, we're still getting sponsors lining up, and the one-day game is still the big cash cow because it's got more commercial breaks than any other form of the game can ever have. So while the players are saying are not too sure about one-day cricket, the people who run the game, as Chappelli just mentioned, the people who run the game are saying, no, it's still a damn good product.
They'd like to think that way, but there are signs that, you know, the interest is just going down. Are there signs that one-day cricket is now going to hit another high in the next 10 years? Or do you think that one-day cricket is at the same kind of level of excitement or just success that it was 10 years back? I think there are clear signs now that the people are sort of waning off. They're still watching it. It's still making money. But I don't think it's showing an upward graph as far as people's interest is concerned.
Chappelli, Australia's sort of been in the forefront of saying one-day international cricket needs to be revamped. We need to take a new look at it because audiences have started falling in Australia. So do you think the time has come to say, look, we need to look at one-day cricket differently?
Well, I mean, they've been fiddling with one-day cricket for quite some time now. But, you know, I look upon most of what they've done as gimmicks. And the problem with gimmicks is that they have a limited lifetime.
Yes.
And when they run their course, what do you do? I mean, you've got, 20 overs of power plays now. People are saying that the overs other than the power play overs are the problem with one-day cricket. So what are they going to do? They increase the power. I mean, eventually what happens? You have 50 overs of power play. Gimmicks. And, I mean, the classic example of a gimmick was the Super Sub. I mean, it didn't even last 12 months. Yeah. Now, you know, if you're going to make changes to a game, you've got to make them so that you've got some confidence in them that they're going to be successful. And if it lasts less than 12 months, then you shouldn't have done it in the first place. And I think part of the problem with one-day cricket, with 50-over cricket, is that it has become a very formulated game. And I think that the power plays are contributing to that. I think the batting side is saying, well, you know, we're going to go like hell in the power plays, and in the overs in between, we're going to try and pick up five or six runs an over without taking too much risk, so we've got some wickets in hand. And if you've got a game of cricket where the batting side is playing without risk and the fielding side, the fielding captain, is allowing them to do that, then you've got a boring game on your hands. And that is one of the problems. And I mean, the in the end, let's get cut to the crux of the matter. It doesn't matter what legislation you have. You cannot legislate for ordinary players or ordinary teams. And you know, there is, I think there's way too big a gap now between the haves and the have-nots in the cricket world, and that is part of the problem. You've got about four teams, maybe five, that, you know, if you put them together, any combination of them together, it's pretty competitive. You go outside of that, and it can be very one-sided. And, you know, a one-sided game of cricket, doesn't matter how many overs you're playing, can be pretty tedious.
So let's get down to all that people are talking that can be done with one-day cricket, and let's see if it fits Chappelli's definition of the gimmicky or whether it has long-term implications. Some of the examples tried out are to increase the number of players from 11 to, say, 12, 13, 14, and the thinking behind that is that the best batsmen always play the best bowlers, and the best bowler, so you therefore play six bowlers and eight batsmen. That was one school of thought. The other, of course, was the super subs, the power plays to try and get the game faster. Now people are saying, let's make it a two innings game. And when you make it two innings game, again, there's two alternatives. One is, at the 25 over point, do you pause the game and then restart the innings? If, for example, you're 100 for four, do you come back at 100 for four? Or, as Channel 9 has now asked Cricket Australia to do, do you then go back and say, no, we want two separate 25 or 20 over games as it is, so that the lead players, lead batsmen can bat twice? Do you like any of these ideas at all, or do you like the good old one-day international, or do you think Test cricket T20 or only Test cricket? What's your thoughts, Sanjay?
Well, Harsha, to be very honest, I'm getting to a stage where I'm getting tired of suggesting gimmicks and changes. And I'm just a little worried that our game, our sport, and that is cricket, has needed, you know, so many gimmicks or changes to make it attractive. So basically what we are looking at is a sport that is really struggling to sustain everyone's interest. Test cricket, you know, we haven't tinkered with it too much because the quality of cricket that comes in and the action that you get to see is excellent, and there's no complaint there. The problem with that form of the game is it's far too long. It's 5 days, 7 hours a day. 50 overs cricket is shorter, but then as Chappelli said, you know, there are two teams who at least 65-70% of the time are not really trying hard to, you know, raise their game.
To get wickets, effectively.
Yeah, a team is happy to pick up ones and twos. The fielding side is happy to give those ones and twos.
It's a non-aggression pact, as someone called it.
And you know, if the administrators and the broadcasters are saying that, you know, 50 overs cricket is fine, it's making a lot of money, then why are they looking at so many changes? So they obviously see that there is something seriously wrong. Well, good luck, you know, let's try a lot of things. Let's try anything new that comes to mind. But I have come to this dangerous realization that I'm actually in a sport that is really struggling to be very attractive to a lot of people.
Well, Dhoni said, for example, Dhoni's played a lot of one-day cricket. Now, he says he likes the one-day form of the game over, say, the 20-over form, because he says it allows a quality player to have a bigger say in the game than in a 20-over game. But Chappelli, what do you think of all that's happening between Cricket Australia and Channel 9 about splitting it into two halves of 20 or 25 overs?
Well, I mean, the first time I heard a suggestion that the innings be split was probably during World Series cricket, which is nearly, 30-odd years ago.
Yes.
And I thought at the time it was a pretty good idea.
Hmm.
And one of the reasons why, well, the two, one, it will eradicate any inequalities in the game. Both teams have to bat at night, and if there's a due factor in the game, then both teams have to deal with it. I also like it from the point of view that you're going to have to sort your tactics out. For instance, if you're worried about, let's say at the end of your 25 overs, you're 4 for 120 and you're worried that you won't have enough batting left, then maybe you've got to structure your batting order so that you almost guarantee yourself that you do have some batting left in the second half. So I like it from that point of view. Now, if you do what some are suggesting in Australia is have 10 wickets for both games, well, to me, that's, you're talking about one of two things. You're either trying to get by stealth more T20 cricket,
yes,
or you're trying to get rid of the 50-over game, because that's all it's going to become is four innings of T20 cricket. So if you want only Test cricket and T20 cricket, will come out and say that's what you want. But don't try by stealth to eradicate the 50-over game, because, you know, I happen, and I mean, the other big question I've got to ask with all these suggestions, or with that particular suggestion, is what happens to the middle order batsman? Does he goes the way of the dodo? because, you know, if you're going to give teams 10 wickets in the first innings, 10 wickets in the second innings, then middle order player, I mean, the middle order player gets short shrift now in T20 cricket. All you're going to do, and I mean, if I'm a batsman, I want a bat. Michael Clarke played a tournament, I think, in South Africa, the first T20 World Tournament, where he faced four balls, I think, for the whole tournament. If I walked away as a batsman from a tournament and I'd faced four balls, I'd be looking for another game to play.
The big difference with splitting it the way that Channel 9 is saying is it becomes 220 over matches with a deficit involved. The only additional variable that comes in is when you play effectively your second T20 game, is that there's a deficit in terms of runs that you've got to make up. But this point's been raised before, and Chappelli makes a very valid point that the middle-order player, everyone will want to open the batting. There will be no middle-order player. And the other question, at some point, once we finalise the format, is what happens if it rains in the third innings? You can understand what happens if it rains in the fourth or the first or the second. If it rains in the third innings, we don't have a rule for it just yet.
You know, this idea has been suggested in the past as well, 220 over games, and every time I've tried to visualise it, you know, I haven't gone too deep into it. You know, just the thought of two innings. All I can see while I'm visualizing this kind of a game is players coming in and out in a day. You know, so
like they used to in the double wicket games and imagine like those.
Yeah, for example, you know, why wouldn't you want to see a Ricky Ponting get 100 in a Champions Trophy as he did in South Africa, which was great, which is a great treat to watch. And people saw the benefits of 50 overs cricket, where there were some good spells bowled by fast bowlers. And there was one world-class innings that you would remember for a long, long time. 220 overs games or 225 overs games means two Ricky Pontings getting 50s or 60s.
Or which if you allowed him to carry the innings over, he could still get 100 in two different conditions.
But why break the innings? You know, people don't like breakages. You know, we have far too many breakages on our television screens. So I'm not a big fan of 25 overs cricket. I'd like to actually bet that maybe, you know, it won't work. It's an experiment people are dying to, you know, get underway. Seriously, it's been tried at the club level in the past. They want to see it in a real tournament. Good luck to them. I've always believed that, you know, if you're tiring of 50 overs cricket, you want some variation, or if you want to swap 50 overs cricket for something that's not T20 cricket, then 40 overs cricket is my, you know, simple suggestion. I played a few 40 overs games, watched a few 40 overs games, and I've liked them better than 50 overs.
Do you think all this is because almost it's like television executives saying, look, the soap has been running for too long, let's sort of pop off the mother-in-law and let's get a younger daughter-in-law in to add more juice to the story?
And that's been, I think, the root of all problems, is that cricket administrators have actually reacted to the demands of television rather than, you know, make a blueprint for what is the best for the game over the next 50 years. You know, where do you want this game to go? And we've got three formats of the game. Where do you want each format, you know, how do you want the three formats to survive? And accordingly, pass on the blueprint plan to the broadcasters and look for a partnership. And if you don't find any partnership, I'm sure there'll be somebody who'll be willing to go along with you.
There's three people here who make a living out of television. But Chappelli, sorry if you didn't understand the mother-in-law, daughter-in-law, but it's a very Indian cultural thing, isn't it, with all our serials?
I'm not a big soap watcher. In fact, no, I'll go even further than that. I don't think I've ever watched 1 minute of one in my life. So,
you don't know what you missed then.
I think I do, and I'm quite happy to go on missing it.
Anyway, let's come back to the more basic issue, though. Is there obsolescence with the format? Is it like photographic film? Is it something that whose time is gone? Is one day cricket something whose time is gone? Do you need to just say 20 and test cricket? Is that the way we're going to go in?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, I haven't heard a lot of players shouting in from the rooftops that they've had a gutful of 50 over cricket. In fact, I think most international cricketers that I've spoken to quite like it. So, I mean, that doesn't mean that it's got a future if the players like it, because people have got to be watching. And I mean, I think. Also, we've got away from an old system that was, I think, was quite a good system, and I'm talking about selection. Bill Laurie, for instance, got sacked as an Australian captain, basically because the selectors didn't like the way, you know, the cricket that was being played under his captaincy. And so they just said, right, well, you know, there's one way to fix this. We get rid of the captain. Now, you know, I don't think it happens anymore that the selectors go to a captain and say, listen, mate, we're not too thrilled with what's going on out there. For instance, if Yeah, if the opposition are just pushing singles around and you're keeping your fieldsmen out on the boundary, if I'm chairman of selectors, I'm going to go to the captain and say, mate, what the hell's going on? You know, you've got to react to, in fact, you shouldn't be reacting, you should be ahead of the game. And I'd be saying to the captain, look, if I see any more of this, I'm going to find another captain and hopefully a better one. We've got a major problem here because in most cases, the administrators don't understand the game. And I mean, if they don't look out on the field and see that that's one of the major problems, you know, when people keep going on about these middle overs being boring, I mean, that's one of the major reasons why it's boring, because, you know, once a fielding captain stops desperately trying to take wickets, then the game goes nowhere. That's one way of fixing it. If you start telling captains they better get off their backside and do something, and if you don't, we'll sack you, then you might get a bit of action.
Okay, let me suggest a gimmick to you. Actually, let me not, because I know you'll give me a sarcastic answer to it, but maybe you need to have bonuses for wickets. But the reason I'm surprised that this debate has started in Australia is because I believe Australians over the years have played the most aggressive one-day cricket. So if there was any place in the world where one-day cricket should have been at its most secure, it should have been Australia, and that is where the biggest debate is taking place on the future of one-day cricket.
Well, I mean, the problem, let's go back to 2005. Sanjay was out here in Australia for the ridiculous rest of the world versus Australia. Let's go back to the reason why, or the reason that was put forward, why it came about. And that was because people felt that there'd been way too many one-sided matches between Australia and other countries, particularly in Australia. At that point, Australia was winning test matches in Australia at a clip of about 70% or maybe even higher. Ridiculous. You know, I'm going to keep coming back to that being the crux of the matter. You've got, if you're going to have lopsided matches, I don't care how long they go for. If you only run them for 5 minutes, if they're lopsided, they're going to become tedious. So there's the problem. Now, how do you fix that problem? Well, that's a major fix. But until you've got eight definitely, and maybe if you get real lucky, 10 countries that are pretty competitive, then you're going to have problems.
So, Sanjay, one final word on all that's happened. You suggested 40 overs. Some people are saying 25. Do you think keep it going for a little longer? There's a World Cup coming up.
Just a bizarre thought. What about, you know, not the World Cup, but maybe a tournament annually or maybe every 2 years where only the top four teams play in the world? And all the other international cricket that you see, which we feel is irrelevant, is actually cricket that you play to qualify to get into the top four. And those are the four teams that play.
The Champions Trophy, which some people think is already an irrelevant tournament, you could then narrow it and make it only the top four and you qualify to play the Champions Trophy?
Yeah, so one-day international cricket that you play every day, every second day, for example, the Asia Cup that's about to happen, you're always playing to qualify to play in that tournament, which will have only four of the best teams in the world. So even that tournament will have, you know, close matches, as Ian was suggesting, because there'll be four good teams. Maybe that could be something to look
at. Maybe. But we've got
or something on those lines. You know, you've got to have something on the lines where, you know, every international match that you play is just not to win a one-day series. And sometimes when you have a four-match one-day series, and, you know, it just kills it. You know, what's a four-match one-day series?
I think the debate really started because you had these long test series, at the end of which you then had seven one-day internationals. I mean, Australia were due to play seven one-day internationals in India this October, and by some good cricket and an accident in terms of the ratings, India became number one, and so suddenly we want to play test cricket. So that's now down to two tests and three one-days. But I like Cipelli's point. He said, do you want to play 20-overs cricket? Do you want to play 50-overs cricket? Make up your mind. Thanks a lot, Cipelli, for joining us. Enjoy your evening.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys. Bye.
Pleasure. Take care. And while we're on this topic, we've got a question for you that Rajesh is going to answer when he pops by later on in the program. Which two teams have played the maximum number of one-day internationals against each other since 2008? If you don't know the answer, you don't deserve to be on Crick Info. And if you're on Crick Info, you probably know the answer anyway. But we'll get more details about that from Rajesh. Which two teams have played the maximum number of one-day internationals against each other since 2008? That's the question for you. Crick Info Talk. Right, since we're talking about the Asia Cup that's on, it's wonderful that someone actually played in the Asia Cup is alongside us. So any memories of the Asia Cup? I remember you said earlier on in this program that India versus Pakistan was the one thing that the Asia Cup guaranteed. But do you have any other memories?
Just actually emphasizes the importance of Asia Cup. You know, I may have played in more than one Asia Cup, but I remember just one game that I played in the Asia Cup. And the reason for that is because I played that final game of the Asia Cup at the Eden Gardens. And, you know, that's why I feel Eden Gardens should always have a cricket match, because that's, you know, that stands out in your memory. And I remember winning that game against Sri Lanka. And I remember Sachin and me having a good partnership, and we were sort of all set to win. And Sachin had kind of a brainstorm. I don't know what happened. He lost his wicket. But we were still cruising quite well against a decent Sri Lankan attack. It was a hot afternoon. And I remember Azharuddin coming in, you know, typically very casual. And Ramesh Ratnaike had the ball in his hand. And at that time, you know, that guy was very quick in the air. And here he comes, bowls the first ball to Azhar, which is full. Azhar just flicks it, you know, nonchalantly, typically Azhar towards mid-wicket. And there was a deep mid-wicket place for him. And he hit that boundary between long on and deep mid-wicket. It's one of the best ground shots that I've seen. And I looked at him, and then I had to share it with somebody. And Azhar didn't bother, you know, looking at me. He was looking everywhere but at me. And I looked at the umpire. I don't know who it was. And I said, what a shot, wasn't it? And the umpire also went, yeah. So I'll remember that.
Moral of the story is that you must remember Azharuddin as a cricketer, not as a contender for president of Badminton Association of India. Well, there you are, Asia Cup. We've all got our memories of the Asia Cup. But frankly, to be honest, there was a time in the Asia Cup when you wished that the early matches would get over quickly when the Omans and the Hong Kongs were playing. But at that point, we weren't sensitive enough. We didn't realize that for people from Oman and Hong Kong, it was a huge stage to be able to go and show that they belonged on or otherwise on that stage. But I just sense that now with the Asia Cup, we've completely lost the original idea, which was to raise funds for the development of cricket in the other countries, and also to give people like those an opportunity to play. So my own view is that I think the Asia Cup has outlived its utility completely. Info Talk. Okay, time then for our numbers game. And every time you think numbers, you think cricket, you think Cricket Info, you think Rajesh. And while Rajesh is at the other end of the line, Rajesh, something that I've been talking about so often, I'm getting bored of talking about it myself, which is that I get the feeling India and Sri Lanka are playing each other like it's a term exam. Every couple of months is a series. You ask Indian player, where are you going next? He says, Sri Lanka. You ask a Sri Lankan, who you're playing next? He says, India. In terms of numbers, is it reflected in numbers, and how does it stack up against other teams playing each other?
Oh yeah, it's more than reflected in numbers. I was checking over the last 2.5 years, that's since the beginning of 2008. India versus Sri Lanka ODIs have happened as many as 28 times.
That's about 12 times a year.
Yes, you were talking about the term exam. It's roughly about like once a month. So you have a term exam once a month. And they've played as many as 8 different series during this period. 3 of them have been bilateral, and 4 were tri-series, tri-nation series. You want to hazard a guess and name all of them?
No. And don't forget, the reason we think there's this overdose of India-Sri Lanka is there have also been a few test matches in between. So is India-Sri Lanka top of the honours list, if you want to call it honours at all, for maximum one day has played against each other?
Almost on top. And perhaps by the end of the Asia Cup, they might tie with Australia and West Indies, which is currently on 125. India-Sri Lanka are on 123. But and Australia and New Zealand are also on 123, but you don't see them playing that often, despite the Chappell Hadley Trophy.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Australia, New Zealand, 123. Other Australia always sort of looked on New Zealand as little brother. But I can understand Australia, West Indies, because I seem to remember in the 80s and early 90s, the West Indies visited Australia every year for a while. So I can understand that one. But 123 times India have played Sri Lanka, and 28 in the last 2.5 years. That's what you're saying.
Yes, and I was just checking for the other teams over this last 2.5 year period, and the best I got was Zimbabwe and Bangladesh. They've played each other 14 times.
Gee, that must have been creeping.
But you can guess why, yeah. No other team probably wants to play them so much. And among the other regular teams, India and Australia have played 13 times, which is, you know, less than half of what India and Sri Lanka have played.
Yeah, and I suspect what that would mean is, I mean, I was thinking of some of the younger Indian players coming through, but that probably holds good of some of the senior players as well. It means that the records are now showing a fairly significant bias towards matches with Sri Lanka.
Yes, and like you said, it will obviously show for the younger ones. But I was surprised at the extent to which even some of the older players' records are showing through. With Dhoni, for example, he has played, 40 out of 162 ODIs against Sri Lanka. So that's about 25%. He scored more than 30% of his total runs against Sri Lanka. And I have a few other numbers of, among players. Gautam Gambhir has played 25 out of 96 against Sri Lanka. And he is on 992 runs against them. So he's fast approaching 1,000 runs against Sri Lanka.
So he's quite happy to play Sri Lanka.
In 5 years,
well,
it will no longer be a milestone. And he hasn't scored 500 against any other team. And he's almost on 1,000 against Sri Lanka. And for example, Virat Kohli has 15 out of 27 matches against Sri Lanka.
That's an interesting one. 15 out of 27 are against Sri Lanka.
And for some of these players, even the stats are getting skewed in terms of the averages. Like Kandambi, for instance, averages 40, almost 41 against India, 15 out of 31 matches against them, and only 25 against the rest. So what's happening is that you keep playing one team and suddenly your numbers get jacked up so much, and for the other teams, it just doesn't look as good.
Maybe we should have a holiday. Maybe India and Sri Lanka should say that we will have a holiday against each other.
Yeah, once a month.
We'll wait and see. Thank you very much, Rajesh, for joining us. It's very interesting what Rajesh has been telling us, that with some of the younger players, even with someone like Dhoni, who's been around 5 or 6 years, the numbers are now starting to get skewed. And I just wonder if someone in Sri Lankan cricket or in the BCCI is starting to say, Sri Lanka all the time. And we love Sri Lankans. I love the Sri Lankan players. I think they're the humblest cricket side in the world. But playing them all the time, I must confess, I'm starting to get a bit bored of it.
Me too, Harsha. That takes the two of us. And there'll be many more, I'm sure.
Excellent. Thanks, Rajesh.
Thank you. Quick Info Talk.
Right, so it's been a program where we've had a lot of debate on the format within one-day cricket. Not as much whether Test and one-day and T20 should coexist, but in what form the one-day game should survive. And it's interesting that in a few months from now, when the World Cup comes to its modern home, which is India, it'll be 40 years and a month since the first one-day international was played. It started very slowly, became the rage, and the 2011 World Cup will come at a very defining moment in the history of one-day cricket. Is it like an Airbus? Is it like a plane 40 years too old? Is it going to be like a floppy disk, just something its time has come and gone? Is it going to be like one of the photographic film cameras about to be consigned to the dustbin? Or is it going to make a stirring comeback? We'll know all about that. But for the moment, thank you very much to Ian Chappell, to Sanjay Manjrekar, to Rajesh, and to all of you. Do let us know what you think about this debate. The email ID to use is timeout. T-I-M-E-O-U-T, simple word, timeout. It's timeout at crickinfo.com. Do let us know what aspects of the game worry you, bother you, you have a point of view on, you want to vent your anger about, or simply where you want a discussion on this program called Timeout. So love your views. Timeout at crickinfo.com is the email ID to use.
This is Crick Info Talk.